Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. So Horton, the Lorax, the Cat in the Hat, and the Grinch are just a handful of the bizarre and beloved characters Theodore S. Geisel, best known as Dr. Seuss, created in his 47 children's books from 1937's And to Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street to 1990's Oh, the Places You'll Go, which is my wife's favorite. During his lifetime, Dr. Seuss was honored with numerous degrees, 3 Academy Awards, and a Pulitzer, but the man himself remained a reclusive enigma. The only authorized biography on the life of one of the literary world's most beloved authors and artists, called Dr. Seuss and Mr. Geisel, was written by Judith and Neil Morgan, and this year marks the 50th anniversary of the television production of How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And to talk about Dr. Seuss is journalist and author Judith Morgan. Happy holidays to you, Judith.
Thank you very much, Dave, and you too.
Well, I will tell you, what a fascinating book that you wrote some years ago. And I was looking at the history of Dr. Seuss because he is a little bit of an enigma. He started his writing career early in life while attending Dartmouth College when he got the name Dr. Seuss. Please share that story with us.
When he was editor of the Jack-O-Lantern, which was the Dartmouth humor magazine, he ended up getting in a bit of trouble. It was Prohibition, and he and a bunch of the lads in his room, I believe, were sharing a very small amount of moonshine.
Uh-oh.
And it was just before Easter, which is why they really got in trouble. But at any rate, the dean caught on to this, and they stripped him of the title of editor of Jack-O-Lantern, said he couldn't write for them, and that's all he cared about, drawing, cartoons, editing. So he began using Seuss, which was his mother's maiden name. And then later on in his career, he had a doctor because he never did get a doctorate at Oxford. He wasn't a great student, at least a focused one. And so he added the doctor he did, doctor for the doctorate he did not receive.
Funny. Well, and then he was there was a humor magazine called Judge at the time that was published, I think, from the late 1800s to about 1947. And that was the first time that he actually had a national work published under Dr. Seuss.
That's true. And he was living in New York, and Judge was a bit outrageous and a bit on the liberal side, and it just suited Ted fine. And he, in fact, most of the Seuss characters you mentioned earlier, all of the Yertle the Turtle, the whole bit, appeared in cartoons for Judge magazine in the 1920s and 30s. He said, I can only draw one elephant and only draw one turtle, and they all look alike. So he kept them up from, well, decades.
You know, he absolutely did. And everybody has to make a living, Judith. So although he, you know, loved the humor magazines and doing the cartooning, he quickly became highly sought after and began earning a living as an illustrator in the advertising world for some of the biggest names in business.
He did. He wrote, as he said, they paid a lot per word, but he wrote for Standard Oil, and he wrote a then very famous ad called Quick Henry the Flit, which was for a bug spray, and that was a big problem in those days, and it was a national craze, just, you know, the catchphrase that we now have for Coca-Cola or Nike or whatever.
You know, he's finally signed by Vanguard Press, and it was the beginning of World War II. He started drawing hundreds and hundreds of political cartoons, and then he joined the Army.
That's true. And that really changed things. He knew he wanted to, but he was older than most, but he was assigned to what they called Fort Fox in Hollywood. And it was a career blessing because in his little band of film people working at 20th Century Fox, but wearing Army uniforms and marching around, not very orderly, but they did. But there was Meredith Wilson, who ended up writing The Music Man. There was Chuck Jones, who ended up with Looney Tunes and Bugs Bunny and The Animator and all kinds of characters. And these fellows remained friends for life, and they were directed by Frank Capra, famous Hollywood
icon.
Yeah,
I read about that.
And they all kept in touch with each other, and it was an interesting way to spend the war. But he did propaganda films that were pretty tough. I've seen some of them.
Yeah, and but, you know, in those experiences, you make a lot of lifelong friends, as you say. And post-war, he got back to writing children's books. Now, his first book, And to Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street, was rejected by dozens of publishers in the beginning. Why was that?
Well, people weren't really writing and buying children's books other than the old classics, you know, Charles Dickens or something. But it was not the huge market it is now. And also, they weren't buying books in rhyme. And his idea of illustrating a book so that everything you read was illustrated and vice versa was just unheard of. And the man who finally did accept his book was a Dartmouth classmate who also had a new job, and he needed to show he could land a client for his publishing, and ran into Ted in New York, and Ted always said that he was the luckiest man. He said, "I'm not a genius, I'm just lucky."
Wow. Wow. And when I think about the rhyming of these books, and I know, you know, later The Cat in the Hat came out in 57, so did How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Life magazine at the time published a report on illiteracy among schoolchildren, and Dr. Seuss was asked to write a book about important words for a first grader.
Well, he was given a list
of names.
Of 250 words that he could use. And I think only one had more than one syllable or It was very limiting, and Ted did not work well, given an assignment, but he'd promised. So he kept throwing the damn list, pardon me, across the room and his office, and finally decided he would just go through it, and the first two words that rhymed would be the subject. And he came across hat, and he came across cat, and he said, "That'll do." And began writing that book, which obviously became a huge turning point in his career, because this was 20 years after Mulberry Street, and it was the first time that he was famous, first time he had fans. And the kids loved it, and the kids demanded that it be part of school, and parents enjoyed reading it. So really, the 1957 was a great turning point. Also, the baby boomers were, all the kids born after World War II were getting ready to read and go to school. And they were huge fans. And that's when children's literature in general took off.
Well, you know, it's funny. You say, you know, these books rhymed. And, you know, I've got a 15-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And my 4-year-old's teacher said, you know, some great books for Alex would be some rhyming books. And you really need to, and I love this. You think about when these books were written. He said, you know, you really got to take a look at those Dr. Seuss books. Now, my wife has just about every golden book on the planet. She has every Dr. Seuss book. All 48 of them, I think, actually, because there was that new one that was kind of recently discovered that was out. I mean, these books not only bring joy to those who read it and take them back to their childhood, but they're very educational.
Absolutely. They have. He wasn't writing with a moral of the story in mind, but they are uplifting. They are against greed in the case of the Lorax, and they're, you know, against prejudice in the case of the Sneetches. There's always you can do better than this underlying it. And even the Grinch, of course, ends up being a good guy.
Yeah, absolutely, at the end of the day. In all your research about Ted Geisel and Dr. Seuss, what was he like? What was he like as an individual, as a person, as a husband, as a friend, as a coworker?
Well, for my late husband, myself, he was the best of friends. He somehow considered himself a journalist. He linked with newspaper people, and we had great trusting conversations and laughing at people over the years. He was very shy in public. He did not enjoy throngs, and he really didn't feel comfortable around children in masses. He understood them, of course. He was very childlike in his head, but he preferred communicating through the written word to getting out and shaking hands. And in his later years, more and more, he just wanted to write, and so he began skipping coming out at all. And that way he managed to finish Oh, the Places You'll Go, which he knew was his valedictory, and he was happy with that.
And he had no kids. And so when you think about one of the most prolific writers in children's literary history, you know, he had no kids to sit down and think about when he was writing, but he did. He knew his audience. He did.
Well, and he said, I was one, you know.
Right.
I mean, he figured that was experience enough. It just...
So true, so true. Well, while the TV special of The Cat in the Hat came out in 1971, The Grinch came out 5 years earlier in 1966, this year celebrating its 50th anniversary, and we'll talk about that and more with journalist and author and biographer of Dr. Seuss, Judith Morgan, next on 720 WGN.
Welcome Christmas, the Woodhouse. Christmas Day will always be just so long.
It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary of television classic How the Grinch Stole Christmas with biographer of Dr. Seuss, Judith Morgan. Judith, The Grinch was published back in 1957 and became a beloved tradition for millions when the TV special debuted 50 years ago. How did the TV special come about?
Ted had served with the animator Chuck Jones in World War II in Hollywood, doing war films and other projects. And Chuck had gone from Looney Tunes and his animation career. He had just switched to MGM. And he thought that one of the Seuss books should be adapted for television. He didn't care which, but he really wanted to make that connection. So he called his buddy Ted and asked, and Ted said no. No interest, because he always believed that his books were pure in themselves, and that's what he wanted. He was not into commercialization at all. And fortunately for all of us, his wife, Helen, had a bit broader picture and talked to Chuck and said, come on down to La Jolla, visit in person. It would be nice to see you again. And in person, Chuck Jones talked Ted into giving it a try, working with a friend, seeing what could happen. The challenge was they were taking a book that takes 12 minutes to read and stretching it into a half hour on television. And they turned out to be an amazing team. They argued, but they both had this vision of sticking with the story. And Ted began to realize all the changes that had to be made for television, such as color,
right.
Because the book itself is black and white, with the Grinch having pink eyes, and that's...
He was black and white and gray, red, yeah.
Thing in the 1950s, yeah.
Yeah, and you think about that story now, you know, and while I love all the Rankin and Bass holiday classics, the Rudolphs and the Frosties, and while I love all the Charlie Browns, The stories were always a little silly, and they'd go off topic. And, you know, Rudolph is now dealing with a dentist and all this other stuff to stretch it into an hour. But this story always, to me, just seemed like a natural expansion of the story that Ted originally wrote.
And that was exactly what Chuck wanted. They managed to take that story and honor it, stay with it, but add music. And Ted had always wanted to write songs, so this was a natural way to do it. And Ted Geisel said it was the easiest book he'd ever written. He only was hung up on the ending because he didn't want to be preachy or religious. He wanted just to be open-hearted about it. And once he drew the end of the book and saw the Grinch seated at the table with the Who's, he knew he had it and concluded with the Grinch himself carved the roast beast. But in the filming, it allowed him to write the wonderful, evil lyrics to "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch." And Ted got so much out of his heart and soul in letting loose on that. The challenge, they agreed, was to take the Grinch of the book and make him even meaner. And it, they did. He went from pink eyes to green eyes, and Chuck Jones was able to stretch that evil mouth all the way down to the floor, practically. On Mount Crumpet, and enhance the sense of evil and malevolent intentions and looking far down the mountain to the Whoville. So they had a good, feisty relationship in creating the book for television.
Well, and you think about who was chosen, and I know Ted wasn't thrilled, Dr. Seuss, with Boris Karloff in the beginning, because, you know, he portrayed Frankenstein. Is he too scary? He was perfect.
It was interesting in that they agreed the voice was probably the most important thing once they got the animation worked out. But when someone said Karloff, Ted said, no, that was Frankenstein to him from the 1930s. And Karloff was almost 80 at that point and not well. In fact, he only lived a couple of years after Grinch, but he took it on, and it was perfect. It was like casting a bassoon with an Englishy accent. And Ted insisted that they alter his voice mechanically, which was such a fancy thing to do.
Interesting.
In those days.
Yeah, yeah.
But they just changed, dealt with it a little bit. Still sounds like Karloff, but it didn't sound like Frankenstein.
No, they took out the highs and they made it grittier.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most delightful things, because the song "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch" is such a huge part of it, is that Karloff did not sing that, which most people think. He apparently couldn't sing, at least not with much impression. So they chose this Hollywood voice actor named Thurl Ravenscroft, who was this deep bass voice, basso profundo. And he sounded enough like Karloff.
Yes.
He carried it off. And he went uncredited in The Grinch. But a lot of Americans today and for decades know his voice because he ended up really making a living as the growling voice of Tony the Tiger on Kellogg Frosted Flakes commercials. So it's the Grinch voice from 66 that you actually hear on the commercials saying, "They're great."
Right, right.
You know, except I can't pitch that low.
Well, they're great. And you know what, though? Thurl, though, you know, it's funny you say that. He was uncredited. So all these years, I think myself, I thought, well, it's Boris. But then when I really, I guess, think about it, and I read that it was Thurl Ravenscroft that did this, Tony the Tiger, I guess you really hear that voice in there, and you don't hear as much Karloff. But it was just a perfect pairing for that song.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And in the first airings, I read that the line, "You're a rotter, Mr. Grinch," which is such a clear statement of disgust, it was censored in the beginning. They didn't like using that because they felt it was too vulgar for television.
Well, perhaps in England it would have been.
Yeah.
But I laugh at Ted's idea of really disgusting things to say, and to say your brain is full of spiders, you have garlic in your soul. I mean, that just thrilled him to get that out. Because that's what a kid would say in the early
right.
days of wanting to say something
sure.
really insulting.
Sure.
You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel. You know, just putting him down. And
Yeah, absolutely. And he was, you know, you mentioned he was black and white and red and pink kind of in the book. And Chuck changed it to green. And I heard the story behind this is that he claimed that all of his ugly rental cars in Washington that he would rent were all the same shade of green, and he felt them ugly. And he decided that green would inspire the Grinch. But I can't think of any other color for this guy, right?
Absolutely. And when you study his fingers or whatever those appendages are on the hand, little hairy fingers, they are evil even in their drumming while he thinks. When you look at the movie, the detail of the green Grinch, the old color of envy is now the color of evil.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly how it feels. Absolutely. Well, the 50th anniversary of The Grinch will air on NBC on Friday, December 23rd at 7 Central in the original 26-minute form that aired in its premiere in 1966, which is pretty cool. So don't miss that. Judith's book is Dr. Seuss and Mr. Geisel. And, of course, for more on Dr. Seuss, visit Seussville.com. Judith, absolute pleasure speaking with you. I know you've had really one of the most original experiences writing this book, as nobody has ever done it since, and it's a great read in looking into a man that nobody really knew.
It's a great joy to be able to share him with you and with your listeners.
Thank you, Judith, and happy holidays to you.
And to you.